Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Is the third text up or the fourth? Drista Shuta Anabhavosya.
Drista Shuta Anabhavosya.
Krishna Syami Tatejasa.
Krishna Syami Tatejasa.
Nashta Triloke Samada.
Nashta Triloke Samada.
Idama Kritanjali. Seen. Shuta. Heard. Anubhava. The power. Asya.
Of this.
Krishnasya. Lord Krishna.
Amita.
Immeasurable.
Tejasa,
whose potencies
so
he has seen and he has heard. Indra's, this is narrating about Indra. Indra has seen and heard the immeasurable power of Krishna. He has seen the immeasurable power of Krishna by having seen Krishna hold up Govardhan Hill and protect the residents of Vrindavan while he was trying to, Indra was trying to kill them all. Nashta.
Nashta.
Destroyed.
Destroyed.
Triloka.
Triloka.
Of the three worlds.
Of the three worlds.
Isha. Of being the Lord.
Of being the Lord.
Mada.
Mada.
His intoxication. So his intoxication of being the Isha or the Lord of the three worlds, Triloka, has been nashta, destroyed. After having seen Krishna's power and having made his own power trying to do something and Krishna stopping what he wanted to do as if it was completely insignificant. So his intoxication, thinking himself the Lord of the three worlds, has been destroyed because now he sees that his power is very small. Idam, these words, aha, spoke, Krita Anjali, joining his palms in supplication, like this. So after that has happened, his seeing Krishna and hearing of Krishna's position, his own pride has been removed. So King Indra folds his hands together, Anjali, and with great, in a mood of submissiveness, he's going to speak. So here's the translation. Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna. What does omnipotent mean? Omnipotent means?
All powerful.
His power is everywhere. That means all powerful. So having now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna, his power was beyond the powers of the material world, and his false pride in being the Lord of the three worlds was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication, he addressed the Lord as follows. Please repeat. Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna.
Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna.
And his false pride in being the Lord of the three worlds.
And his false pride in being the Lord of the three worlds.
Was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication. He addressed the Lord as follows. So Perhaps we'll see how it goes either today and tomorrow. We'll read the first of Indra's prayers or just today. We'll see. Inyu vacha vishuddha sattvam tavadama shantam tapo mayam vasta rajas tamaskam mayamayo ayam guna sampravaho navidyate te grahananubandha. So Indra is beginning to speak. He's, on one hand, he's apologizing to Krishna and begging for Krishna's forgiveness because he's afraid of Krishna's power. But on the other hand, he's informing us about Krishna's position as the all-powerful Lord. So here's the translation. King Indra said, "Your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change. It is shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance." So how many symptoms of Krishna's transcendental form were named there? I'll read it again. So listen. Your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, so you could say that's one symptom, is undisturbed by change. It never changes. It is shining with knowledge, and it is devoid of passion and ignorance. They could say devoid of passion, devoid of ignorance. Okay, who can remember one of those? Raise your hand if you can remember one of those qualities of Krishna's form. Yes?
Shining with knowledge.
Shining with knowledge. Yes, another one.
Goodness.
Full?
Full of goodness.
Pure goodness, not only goodness, because it's not the material mode of goodness. It's unaffected by change, and it's devoid of passion, and it's devoid of ignorance, and it is pure goodness, but not the goodness of this material world. It is Vishuddha Sattvam, transcendental purity, the transcendental energy. And the second line of the verse: in you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material
nature,
which is based on illusion and ignorance. So there's two parts of this verse. The first part describes the symptoms of Krishna's transcendental body. That's what Indra is describing. Previously, Brahma has also described Krishna's transcendental body as being so unlimitedly powerful and completely different from his own body, even though Brahma himself was so powerful. So the qualities, again, shining with knowledge. It is effulgent with knowledge. No passion, no ignorance. It's pure goodness, because everything in the material world is mixed. There's nothing pure in the material world, so we can understand this Vishuddha Sattva from the verse. It means it is transcendental. And it is undisturbed by change. Everything in the material world, it changes continuously. We may want some, we may be in a good situation and don't want it to change. And we may be in a bad situation and we wish it to change. But regardless of whether we want it or not to change, it must change. This is the nature of the time factor in the material world. But the transcendental situation is different. It is beyond the modes of material nature and is beyond the force of time. So Krishna's body, it does not change. And the second part of the verse, in you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature. So there is no goodness, passion, and ignorance in the constantly changing material modes in Krishna, which is based, those modes, which is based on illusion and ignorance. Okay, please repeat. King Indra said,
King Indra said,
your transcendental form,
your transcendental form
a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change,
shining with knowledge,
and devoid of passion and ignorance.
It does not exist in it,
in you does not exist
the mighty flow of the modes of material nature,
which is based on illusion and ignorance.
Okay, here is the purport. The great Bhagavatam commentator, Srila Sridhar Swami, has masterfully explained the Sanskrit elements of this profound verse, very deep verse. So what great acharya are we going to hear the commentary of?
Srila Swami.
So it's Vishuddha Sattvam Tavadama Shantam. The Sanskrit word dhamma has several meanings. Dwelling place, house, abode, and so on. A favorite thing or person. Delight or pleasure. Third, form or appearance. Fourth, power, strength, majesty, glory, splendor, or light. Concerning the first set of meanings, the first set is dwelling place or abode. The Vedanta Sutra states that the absolute truth is the source and resting place of all existence. Now keep in mind that Indra, Lord Indra, who was extremely powerful, was seeing that absolute truth standing before him. And that absolute truth was just like a little boy, so small in size, so cute. And where was he standing by? He was sitting by the base of Govardhan Hill, and the cows were nearby, and the boys were nearby, not very nearby, but they were there, not too far away. And he was wandering around Vrindavan without his shoes and holding a stick for herding the cows and a buffalo horn, things like that, and a rope tied around his shoulders or his neck or his turban, and his flute was tucked. How is it possible that this boy, because he looked like a boy, although a very wonderful, effulgent, and beautiful boy, but he still looked like a young child. Mm-hmm. How is it possible that this young child is the absolute truth? Because the absolute truth is that substance that nothing is external to. It is all-inclusive. Every other truths and powers, all in existence, all in non-existence, it is resting in this absolute truth. And there he was standing, or sitting like a cowherd boy. How is this possible? It is certainly not possible for anyone but Krishna, because it is not possible from the material point of view. But Krishna's transcendental body is unlimitedly powerful. Unlimitedly powerful. To be the absolute truth, to be unlimitedly powerful, to be all-pervading, to have everything resting upon him, and yet be a cowherd boy is not impossible for Krishna. Who's going to tell Krishna or the absolute truth, you cannot do this if you want? You want to be a cowherd boy, this is how you get your pleasure, exchanging rasa, intimate dealings with all the devotees of Vrindavan? No, because my mind says that it shouldn't be like that, because the absolute truth has to be so unlimitedly powerful that we cannot ascribe any characteristics to it, and it cannot be in one place. It has to be everywhere, and therefore it can be nowhere. So this is the materialistic, finite mind trying to climb, using its own powers of what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false, what is possible and what is impossible. trying to use its own limited powers to understand the absolute truth, the absolute reality. And the result is, it is incomprehensible. No one, through the powers of one's own intelligence or mind or abilities, can actually understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A different process is required. So therefore, Lord Brahma said, Stanei Sita Shrutikatam Tanaman Manobir Ye Pyaso Zito Zito Pyasita Trilokyam. That by the process of hearing about Krishna from the great acharyas, the great teachers like Srila Srila Swami, then we can understand something about that absolute truth. Otherwise, with our own power, what can we understand? It is trying to measure the ocean by counting how many thimblefuls of water. We just simply cannot, practically speaking, actually speaking, understand. Even if you estimate, you cannot understand. So, the Vedanta Sutra, concerning the first set of meanings, the Vedanta Sutra states that the absolute truth is the source and resting place of all in existence. Everything in existence rests upon Him. That is the basis. Just like I'm resting or sitting upon this cushion, and the cushion is upon the wooden base, and the wooden base is on the wooden legs, and the wooden legs are on the marble floor, and the marble floor is on the concrete pad, and the concrete pad is on the foundation, perhaps, or somewhere, and then the earth comes in, and the earth. So there's everything is resting on something else. This is relative. Everything in the relative world is resting on something else. That means it's dependent. For me to be sitting here, I'm dependent on this. But the absolute truth is that being, that entity, that everything rests on Him, and He rests only upon Himself. His own existence is the cause of His own existence. So is that possible to understand from the material point of view? No. Yeah. That is what it means to be the Parameshwara, or the Supreme Person. Ununderstandable from the material point of view. And if we try to understand the Absolute Truth using our own intelligence, we will not understand the Absolute Truth in actuality, in totality. We'll only understand one part of it. And the part we will understand, it's not like the material world. So it doesn't, because it's beyond, the Absolute Truth by definition is beyond the material world. So we'll understand that the Absolute Truth possesses no material form, no material qualities, no material intelligence, no material desires, no material modes of nature. But we won't understand anything in the positive of the definition of the Absolute Truth. So what's an example of a positive definition, a positive quality in the definition of the Absolute Truth? That Krishna has his skin color is like the color of a monsoon cloud. And does that fit with a negative quality of the Absolute Truth? That He has no material color, skin color, and no material skin. It does fit with it. It is not contrary to it at all. But it is positive knowledge about what it is. Just see the difference. He has no material skin. He has no material bones. He has no material skin color. So that tells you what he doesn't have. And that is true. Krishna doesn't have those things. But that doesn't give us a satisfying and complete and full and positive understanding of who and what this Absolute Truth actually is. And it's impossible to understand the positive through studying, through our own powers and studying what he is not. How can we understand that Krishna likes to take care of cows who are his great devotees? How will we possibly understand that?
that he likes to play the flute. We can understand Krishna has no material desires, he has no material likes, he doesn't like any material musical instrument, he doesn't like anything material, there's nothing to matter connected to him, but how can we understand that his favorite instrument is the flute? It is not possible. That we need a different methodology of acquiring knowledge to understand in this way. So, the absolute truth, or the Dham, the absolute truth is the source and resting place of all existence. And in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, the absolute truth is said to be Krishna. Param Satyam Dhimahi. Satyam is the name of Krishna. From the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, the Garbha Stuti, or the prayers of the demigods to Krishna in the womb. Understand what that means, that the absolute truth is the source of all in existence and the resting place of all in existence. It is so important to try to think about what that means. All in existence. Think about what existence is. What we consider. Usually we're not conscious. We just sort of bumble through our days. Not conscious that we exist even, practically speaking. Our mind just goes on and on and on and on. And we're just, and the mind, te dvanva moha. Vinaya Muktam, it traps us. Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvanva Mohena Bharata. All day long, we just tend to exist within the Icha and the Dvesha of the mind. What does Icha and Dvesha mean?
Desire.
Yes, or the attractions and the repulsions. The attractions and repulsions of the mind. I want this, I don't want that. And we just exist in that platform all day long. I like this, I don't like that. And the mind just has fuel to continuously bewilder us. Minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day. Oh, we forgot the months. Month after month, year after year, decade after decade, and then life after life, just trapped. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bhara. This is the duality. I want this, and we just, our whole days spent chasing the things we want and pushing away the things we think we don't want. Icha dvesha, and we're bewildered in that way, so much so that we don't even remember that we exist, really. We forget that we're even here. And most of us, there's no one home. It's just this mind is just. And we take it so seriously, what we're thinking is very, very important. Did you ever notice that? That at one moment, something could think like this is the all important thing in existence. The mind gets filled with a desire, and this is the only thing that's in existence. And then the next moment, some distraction comes along, or we see that same thing in a different light. And that thing is no longer attractive to us. It's not important at all. Has anyone ever had that experience? Yes? No? Especially when the mind becomes filled with passion. So important, and then something happens and it's gone. So this mind, bandhuratmatmanastasya yenatmaivatmanajitanatmanastu shatrave, can be the greatest enemy because it's so actively attaching itself to the material world in the form of I want this, Icha, and Dvesha, I don't want it.
The mind becomes the greatest enemy because it attaches us to the material world, and we forget that there is any other existence other than our mind. What to speak of inquiring about the absolute truth? But even this mind, it comes from Krishna. It is one of the chief agents of the material energy whose business is to keep us in the material world. So we don't have the inclination, because of this reason, to understand the absolute truth, and that is the purpose of our existence. Not to be pulled around by the mind's desires and aversions. Because if we do that, oh, where will our mind take us in Kali Yuga? Where will we take our next birth? If we end up monkeys in Vrindavan, we're pretty lucky. We don't want to be monkeys in Vrindavan. Oh, they suffer so much, so much. It just gives us so much suffering, the mind. There's so much suffering. In this life and in the future lives. Because based on the mind, adishaya manastayam, Visha upasevate, we take our next body. So therefore Indra is understanding something about his own illusion, and understands that this cowherd boy who stands before me now is the resting place of all in existence, and not only that, he is the source of all in existence. Aham savasya prabhavoma taksavam prabhatite. Everything comes from him. Just think of what it means, everything. Name something in the category of everything. Huh? The universe. That includes quite a lot. The universe comes from Krishna. What else in the category of everything? The material world. What's the material world? What do you mean? More specific.
Millions of universes,
so even bigger, macrocosmic. Yes, what else?
The whole creation.
The whole creation. Everyone's on really going for the high ones, huh? The madanga, the water thing, the marble floor, the air, birds, sky, fish, waves, surfers, windsurfers, snorkel divers. The Great Barrier Reef. India.
The big oceans.
The big oceans. The Taj Mahal in Agra.
Ants.
The ants. The McDonald's on the Mathura Road. But it's vegetarian, I found out, so it's very considerate of them. Huh? The senses come from Krishna. The false ego comes from Krishna. Everything. The mind comes from Krishna. Our intelligence, whatever intelligence we have, whether it be great or small, it comes from Krishna. This wooden stand comes from Krishna. If someone said to you, where does this wooden stand come from? What would you say, first thing? Okay. Some people would say it comes from a tree, some people would say it comes from India. So everything in existence, just think of what it means, how powerful that absolute truth is, and that absolute truth is Krishna. So no wonder Indra was bewildered, because it is inconceivable, impossible to, practically speaking, understand. And unless one is very extremely fortunate, gets a lot of mercy from Krishna in the form of the mercy from the devotees, One cannot actually understand that Krishna is the absolute truth. Even so many people that are spiritually inclined, they think that the absolute truth must, by definition, be impersonal. Mm-hmm. And they think that if you say that the absolute truth has a form, you are limiting the absolute truth. And we say, if you say the absolute truth can't have a form, you're limiting him. Because if he wants to have an absolute truth, aren't you limiting a form? If this is what he is, who are you to say he can't? And he has to be impersonal. I'm sorry, Krishna, you have to be impersonal. Why? I want to herd the cows. Sorry, you have to be impersonal because the absolute truth can't have a form. He can't herd the cows. And I don't like flute music. He should play the guitar, electric guitar, like Jimi Hendrix. It's obviously insane and foolish. How can we limit the absolute truth by ourselves? So the first set of Muni, the Vedanta Sutra, states that the absolute truth is a source and resting place of all existence. And in the first verse of that of the Bhagavatam, that absolute truth is said to be Krishna, Param Satyam Dhimayi, or Vasudev, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Although Lord Krishna exists in his own Dham, Dhamna Svena, Sada Narasta Kuhakam, he exists, that absolute truth exists in his own Dham, his own abode, called Krishna Lok. I thought you said that everything exists in him. So how is he existing in Krishna Loka? That means he's not here? No, he is here. He's everywhere. He's in every atom and between every atom. But he also exists in a very, very special way. With a full manifestation of his personality, he exists in that way, in Krishna Loka. And that is where we are meant to go, and that is where he wants us to go. And we want to stay here. Why? And even if we want to stay here, we can't stay here. We'll be kicked out by death. But why do we want to stay here?
We want to enjoy separately from Krishna.
Because the mind has so many desires, so many aversions, so many ways it plans to be happy here. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, we can't be happy here. Because how could you be happy in a place that is falling apart by the power of time? It's continuously changing, and we are longing for an eternal situation because we are eternal, and we are longing for stability and security, and it is not possible in the material world, in material consciousness. For that, the longings of the soul, and our problem is our own longings, the longings of the soul are being expressed through the material mind. And therefore, just like a clear white light bulb being expressed through a green filter, everything appears green. So similarly, the soul is longing for its eternal situation, for its peaceful situation, param shantim, for the eternal abode, but it's being reflected through the material mind and the citta, the material consciousness, and therefore it's grasping onto the things of this world, and therefore we suffer until we purify the consciousness. Remove these material desires and strongly, strongly, strongly get the purified mind from the mind to stop being the enemy and to be the bundle of Atmatmana, the friend. being attached to the wonderful form of Radha Pallava Gonatai, Sisi Jagannath Balde, the devotees, the holy name, the books, the Bhagavatam, this Krishna's service. This, the mind has to hold on to something. There's so many impersonalists say to stop the mind, to stop the mind, but it doesn't work because they know that it's grasping onto matter. It causes so much trouble, and their solution is just let go of matter and don't hold on to anything. Let the mind slow down and stop, and they cannot do it. They cannot do it. Because the mind's very nature is sankalpa, vikalpa, acceptance and rejection. It's always holding on to something. So we have to become attached to Krishna. Let the mind become attached to Krishna. This is the prayer of the devotees. Let my mind somehow become attached to you, O Lord. Now I'm so unfortunate. I'm attached to so many things of this world, even though janiya shunya bishakainu, even though I know I shouldn't, even though I've heard the Bhagavatam, I've heard Prabhupada's words, the devotees' words, I shouldn't be attached to the things of this world, yet I am knowingly and willingly drinking poison continuously. How unfortunate I am. Oh Lord, please, let me become attached to you so that my consciousness becomes purified. And then when I'm leaving this world, my mind won't be grasping onto something of this world, which will cause my coming back to this world. Saratat bhava bharata takvadeham punah janma. We want to be attached to Krishna. Naitimam, then no coming back to this world. So we have to become absorbed in hearing about Krishna and chanting Krishna's name. When I say we have to, I don't mean we have to, because clearly we don't have to. We have many unlimited alternatives, and that's what the material world specifically does. It gives us so many alternative things to be attached and attracted to other than Krishna. That's the business of the material world, to make the bars of this prison house so attractive and we become attached and attracted to the prison so we don't even want to leave. That's the material world. So he exists in his own abode called Krishna Loka. He himself is the abode of all existence. All existence rests in him, and his abode is in Krishna Loka. How is that possible? Everything is in him, and yet he stands upon the ground of Goloka Vrindavan, the dust of Vrindavan. But everything is coming from him, everything is in him, and yet he's standing. Think about that. What do you think when you think about that?
That means we're in
Vrindavan. What? How does it mean we're in Vrindavan?
If Krishna is always in Vrindavan and we're always in him, that means we're always in Vrindavan.
Yes, nice. Everything, but that wasn't, yes, it was a good, very nice point. But we're certainly...
We're asleep,
yes. But Krishna, everything is in Krishna, and yet Krishna is standing upon the dust of Vrindavan. This is inconceivable. Which is not difficult for Krishna to do, because he has a chintya shakti. Inconceivably powerful. Because if the absolute truth, if Krishna wasn't inconceivable, if he was able to fit within our finite minds, then he wouldn't be great. He wouldn't be the greatest. He wouldn't be the cause of all causes. He wouldn't be unlimited. So someone could say, ask the question, well, if the absolute truth, I accept that the absolute truth is inconceivably powerful, But how do we, and that he can do whatever he likes. But how do we know that he lives in Krishna Loka? Just because he can, if he wants to, how do we know he likes cows? How do we know he likes to play the flute? Because he can, if he wants to, and I admit that we can't stop him if he wants to, but how do we know that's what he wants? How do we know that this isn't just somebody's imagination? And ascribing something from his own mind, anthropomorphically, upon the absolute truth. What's the answer to that one?
Krishna is himself saying in the shastras that he loves cows.
He says in the shastras, so that means we accept the shastra. Why do we accept the shastra as the absolute truth? Why do we accept the disciple succession? But anyway, you can get into some very interesting arguments with this one. But ultimately, you can't exactly prove it, because bhakti isn't subject to logic. Proof means logical proof. It's not subject to logic. It's descending knowledge. That's Krishna's mercy. It comes by Krishna's mercy. It's realized knowledge. So Prabhupada would say there's no other way to understand the absolute truth other than Shastra. And then if you say, well, I don't believe Shastra, it's mythology, Prabhupada said that is the only argument you could have. But he would say, do you think all these great acharyas, Mahaprabhu, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Ramanujacharya, these great saints, Madhvacharya, do you think they're just fools and they spend their whole life worshipping the deity and studying these books? And they're so foolish that it's just imagination, that they're doing it without actually getting realization by Krishna's mercy. They're spending their whole life and they're ecstatically, and they have nothing practically to do with the material world. So many of them were wealthy persons. Raghunath Das Goswami, so wealthy, enjoyment, giving it all up. And just chanting Hare Krishna and studying Shastra and engaged in meditation, you think they're so foolish? They're worshipping the deity? You think it can be just matter? These great, great persons who are honest and have no motive to cheat? Whenever there is a crime, the first thing the police look for is a motive. And usually when there's a killing, there's usually two motives. There's always two factors in there. When one man kills another man or something, they look to find out where the woman is involved, and they look where money is involved. Because these things bring out such feelings in people that they're even willing to kill others. But these kind of people, they have no attachments in the material world, and they're absorbed fully. Can you bluff that? Can you do that just from the mental platform? From now on, I'm not going to have any attachments in the material world. Now I'm not going to be attached to the objects of this material world, family, friends, money, this, that. On the power of just your mind, I'm going to do that over tens and tens of years, impossible, practically speaking. Therefore, we can learn something from these persons who have seen the absolute truth. Oh, you can say mythology. But these people were getting such a taste that it allowed them to give up all their material attachments. You cannot do that. Param dvisvanavartate vishyavanivartante nirharasyadeina raso vajam raso prasya. Param dvisva navartate. Unless you get a higher taste, you cannot give it up. Interaction with the material world. These persons did it. The great scientists of this world, who you trust so much, the great anthropologists who you've put your faith in, they cannot give up the material world. So it's actually a very, very strong argument. Very strong. You cannot prove it as in a logical deductive proof. But it's very strong. Because the only way to prove it is to realize it. And the only way one can realize the Absolute Truth in its fullest extent is by the mercy of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. It is realized knowledge. It is realized knowledge. What verse of the Bhagavad Gita says that? What chapter? Ninth chapter. It is realized knowledge. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. It is very, very secret. It's an open secret. But it's a secret nevertheless. You cannot penetrate into this secret by the power of your mind or intelligence. There is a different way to penetrate into it. It's called bhakti or devotional service, loving devotional service. A different technology is required. Because that Absolute Truth is inconceivably powerful. You cannot penetrate it. One cannot penetrate it through his own powers. One has to attract his mercy. And then everything becomes revealed. Yasya deve parabhaktir. We'll read one more. There's just a few more lines, and then we'll continue tomorrow, Krishna willing. Or two more. The very name Krishna. Oh, there's more here. He lives in his own abode, or called Krishna Loka. He himself is the abode of all existence, as Arjuna confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, where he addresses Krishna as Param Dham, the supreme abode. Everything rests within him. Again, think of what that means, and think of that. That Absolute Truth is a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. No wonder Brahma and Indra are finding it impossible to understand. This is very important. These verses are very important. This is the 27th chapter. And what's the 28th chapter called? Does anyone know? It's about Nanda. Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from Varuna. And then the 29th chapter begins a section of five chapters that are the most intimate dealings of the Absolute Truth, his most intimate exchanges with his devotees, the Ras Panchadhyaya. And five chapters that deal with Krishna's parikya bhav, his loving exchanges with the cowherd girls. So we have to understand that this is not ordinary. This is the most extraordinary thing. It has nothing to do with the modes of material nature. Otherwise, we will completely misunderstand what we're going to hear quite soon. So here, in the way that Sukadev and Srila Vyasadeva and Sutta Goswami are describing these things, there's always, in the 10th canto, there's always lila, then there's some tattva, there's the pastimes, and then there's philosophy. They keep reminding us that this is extraordinary. It is not ordinary. Krishna's dealings are not at all like my dealings. I am motivated to do something because I desire something. Desiring means I lack something. I lack ultimately full satisfaction. But Krishna's dealings, he is acting, but his motivation has nothing to do with what he lacks. It all has to do with what he wants. Because he, as the Absolute Truth, lacks nothing because everything rests in him. He's the creator of everything, the maintainer of everything, the destroyer of everything. Everything rests on Him. He is the absolute truth. And yet, He is wandering around Vrindavan as a coward boy. This is so mysterious. So Raja Vidya Rajaguyam. And therefore we study the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam so we can understand this canto, this 10th canto. And we read Indra's prayers very, very carefully so we can understand the wonder of the Absolute Truth's dealings in Goloka Vrindavan. And we should not take it cheaply. We should carry these verses, these cantos, especially what we're going to hear, upon our head with the greatest reverence, and not in any way think that it has anything to do with the material world, Krishna or Krishna's devotees who they're interacting with. We see the material world through our mind. We don't exactly see the material world, we see our mind. Just like when you see this, what do you see? What do you, without having to let yourself fall into my trap, what do you see? Okay, what do you see?
Microphone.
A microphone. You see a microphone. Actually, you fell into the materialist's trap because these are all plastic. Nowadays, they used to be made out of metal. Except for this point here, perhaps. And this here. But it's actually just some atoms and molecules put together, and the mind imposes the concept or the category of microphone on this configuration of plastic and metal and wires and this and that. When we see it, we see microphone. When we see this, we see bookstand. We see book. But that's the mind imposing its conceptions upon matter. When a child who's 1 month, 2 weeks old sees that, doesn't see microphone, just who knows? We can't say what the child sees, but it's just some configuration of matter. Usually they see everything in relationship to food, and they all take it. They see it as food. You see it as microphone because your conceptual concepts are different. But we can't see Krishna's lila with the conceptions of our mind. We need the conceptions of expanded minds to see Krishna's lila. And that those concepts are given to us by the acharyas. Therefore, we read Prabhupada's purports very carefully. We read the purports of the acharyas very carefully. And therefore, we allow our vision to see according to their vision. Because if I impose my material concepts, I will miss everything. Okay, so we read just a little bit of this. Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments? Another couple of minutes. Huh?
This wonderful Lord, whose pure goodness, shining with knowledge and free from material words and who rests everything and who is the super soul in the heart of plants, animals and humans, I have heard often that he is outside of everything, and I find that a bit difficult to understand.
You mean outside of everything, meaning?
Well, he is not part of anything, outside of everything.
He's both. Antar bahir avastitam. He's inside and outside of everything. Is it hard to understand? And that he's in his own abode of Krishna Loka? It is like a king who everything goes on by his power, which we'll call government. But sometimes he's just in his apartment with his family just playing. So do you think he always and only just thinks about all the governmental work? Because then he wouldn't be the reservoir of all pleasure. If he was just thinking about the material world he would be the reservoir of all misery, because the material world is a miserable place. So that he does just for the part of his power, his dealings in the material world. But he's still the one upon whom it all rests, but he is situated in the abode of bliss. You understood that already. Yes? Just like, because he is Satchitananda Vigraha, he is bliss, knowledge, and because we see the material world as all in all, he, from the spiritual realm, he doesn't. There is something else. Three quarters of existence, approximately, if you can take three-fourths of infinity, you can't do it. But just to give us an estimation, this is just a small part of reality. And there's something greater. Or just like, or even if you have a job, when you're in your job, you're working. And, you know, you have to push papers around and type in this number or something like that. But then you have your real life at home. So Krishna, he's not only doing the job of maintaining the material world, he does that with just a small part of his energy. His real life is in Goloka Vrindavan. That's what he really wants to do. And out of his mercy, he deals with the material world for our benefit. Any other questions or comments?
I have one question. One comment. First comment is, first time by your mercy I understood what is absolute truth. Because just like prayer, holding a mushroom, a child needs to go with the hill. So Krishna by your will, even without finger he can see. Thank you very much. Now my question is, that means soul is imprisoned in this body.
The soul and super soul.
Is imprisoned in the body. So what is holding it? Why can't it go to the actual mind?
It's trapped in the subtle body and then the gross body. But it's attachments. And what do it's attachment. It's not pure enough to leave. It has material desires. We have material desires. So when we no longer have material desires, we are released from this bondage. And when we have the strongest of spiritual desires, then we can go to the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan.
Can you be free of material desires? Because there are so many innumerable material desires. Is there any state that we can be free of?
What do you think?
Why?
What do you think?
I don't know.
This is the same question that Devahuti asks. The third canto, she says that it feels like this sometimes. If I got rid of all my material desires, would there be anything left? Would I still exist even? And Prabhupada says that is Buddhistic. Yes, of course. And the process of Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, it dissolves the subtle body. It gives us, it removes the material desires, Cheto Dhapana Majanam and Shriyakaraiva Chandrika Vacharanam, our spiritual desires blossom. Yes, this is so many places this is described. It's not easy though. Okay. Thank you very much. Shiva Bhagavatam, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Gaurava.